SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races. Sid Fernando joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And boy, it was a Hill and Dale festival this weekend. Here's another McLean's Music, Sid, for John Secura and Seth Klarman and Chad Brown doing all they can to help McLean's Music. First came cloud computing and now comes complexity. There was the pair of violence. Two-year-old turf sprinters, and there was Curlin getting current to win the Bourbon and make its way toward the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. There's just a million things going on that we can talk about, including the fireworks at Tattersall's yesterday and OBS off to a good start with the select portion. Two more days of open stock. Quality Road kicked up to $1.50 for next year. Before we talk about all the headlines, two passings, Sid, DRF alums that I don't want to let slide by, and you and I actually talked about one 10 days ago, and we didn't talk about it on air, but people should know who knew these longtime contributors, Neil Cook, very tragically, and then just this past week, Jack Karlick at 85, and Karlick, a absolute stalwart on the West Coast among handicappers, hadn't heard his name in a while, but I saw that Brad Free, who had written about Jack's passing, and I assume that you crossed paths with Jack at DRF.
Yeah, I did. I did cross paths with Jack, but only years ago, and of course, he was West Coast,
right?
But a great guy. Yeah, and, frequently I'd go out to, whenever I went out to the West Coast, of course, I saw Leon Rasmussen, who was a good friend of mine, and Jack was a great guy, and a couple of times I distinctly remembered, get-togethers and running into Jack over there. Neil, I knew a little better because he was based out here, and I knew him actually fairly well because when DRF started to change, become more modernized, Steve, Neil and Duke Dossick and I all lived in Lexington for 6 months, kind of modernizing that office over there, and then from there we went out to Arizona, where DRF was at that time, and started up that office in Arizona. Then of course I came back to New York, but so I actually spent quite a lot of time with Neil, and his death was, as you and I spoke, pretty tragic, because he's a young guy. And relatively our age. I don't want to say young, but he was right around our age.
Yeah, I had only met him a couple of times, an outsized personality.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it's been noted anywhere either.
Which is sad, because there's a lot of people from, I guess the 90s, that's a fair time period, and right. Come up to Saratoga, the DRF house, as it's referred to, and I imagine things are more sedate at the DRF house in this era than it was in that era.
Yeah, well, that era was when Neil was involved with stuff was probably the craziest because yeah, Neil had a penchant for going out.
or staying in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Where there was a party wherever there was something to imbibe and mayhem seemed to ensue. I don't mean to be frivolous.
Brett Kavanaugh's line would be his epitaph: "I like beer."
I'm pretty sure it's Ed Fontaine. Ed told a story about him and Matt Hegarty and Cook that was just hysterical, and I can remember being at John E's actually that he told this at years ago in Louisville a derby and. I think it might have been me and Haskin and Fontaine, and I don't even know how it came up, but it was that's one that sticks in my mind. And when it comes to Neil Cook, well, very sad, and I wanted somebody.
It was
like
nice to acknowledge it, yeah. Because,
yeah.
You know, he did make some big contributions eventually to the way he was English. So when he came over. You know, when you see, for example, the little icons of silks and stuff in the paper, and he was a design guy, and he did make quite a few contributions. He's a really smart guy, unfortunately, death was under somewhat cloudy conditions. I think people are still trying to sort it out. It only happened about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So hopefully, at some point, there might be a better obituary acknowledging it.
I wanted to include it, and we can turn to the topic at hand, Sid. A couple of quick sale notes. Yesterday, Coolmore and Godolphin once more engaged in fisticuffs for a yearling, and you had a 4 million pound sale. Things were pretty good at OBS too for day one, the select portion of the 3 days.
There were the OBS sale. There's so much happening right now, it's tough to keep track of everything, but the OBS sale is from the pure raw numbers standpoint has kind of held its ground from the year before. The Tattersall sale that you referenced, the top price was through day one was a $3.4 million Galileo, $3.4 million guineas Galileo Colt, full brother to Japan, Sir Isaac Newton. He becomes the most expensive yearling this year. If you were to convert it, obviously, to dollars, easily the most expensive. The most expensive in the United States this year was the $2.4 million Warfront. The Galileos yesterday averaged over 1.1 million guineas. One of those that I think sold for 1.1 million guineas. Of course, the 3.4 million went to MV Magnier Coolmore. There was a 1 million or 1.1 million Galileo that went to Sheikh Mohammed, bred by John and Tanya Gunther. So they keep their name keeps appearing wherever you go.
And I saw a picture yesterday of Sheikh Mo with the Gunthers, and they're hitting on all cylinders. Obviously, Sid.
Yes, well put.
And it's funny how this happens. We've talked and you know, you think about over the last few years, 2-3 years, the names that had spates of success, like Clear Sky and Mack Merhall in quick succession, and then the Gunthers seem to be this year's model on that front, and you fold in Hertrick and Fielding that have had perennial success now for the last 3-4 years. Their names have consistently shown up. So it's just interesting, though, how this seems to happen.
It does happen, and sometimes things happen, or they continue to happen, and you mentioned the watercress guys, but a breeder who consistently seems to fire is Stone Street Stables, and there's actually a couple of ties in we can do here. One is that Restless Rider, the filly by Distorted Humor, was bred by Stone Street and sold the dam, I think, for $75,000. Mack Merhall bought the dam. And Mack Merhall will be reselling that dam, I think, in full to Honor Code at Keeneland in November. Stone Street also was the breeder of Complexity by McLean's Music. Now, McLean's Music is by Distorted Humor, so you can see a Stone Street thing there. Stone Street actually bred McLean's Music, RNA'd him for like, I don't know, $950 or something, raced him, got that one good start where he was absolutely phenomenal, never raced again, went to stud at Hillendale. He's had 2 grade one winners, both grade one winners owned by the same guy, trained by the same guy. And so there's another thing there, right? So owners get attracted to the stallion that they've had success with, Steve, and sometimes they hit pay dirt again. And that's certainly what happened to Seth Klarman and Chad Brown there.
And that it's just kind of either coincidental, but at the same time, it also speaks to the buying approach. And you do see this. We brought this up with Joe Miner last week, talking about his interest and his locking in on Quality Road early before
right.
many others. And you see this repetitive success that can generally be tied to one bloodstock agent or a group that that has an interest and wants to tap a vein, basically.
Yeah, and to tie it in with Joe Miner also happened to breed Uncaptured, who became Canada's Horse of the Year at 2. Uncaptured went to stud, and his first crop is 2 this year. He was, of course, conditioned by owned by Jack Oxley and trained by Mark Cassie. What did Oxley do and Cassie? They went and paid big money for capturing the grade from the first crop of Uncaptured, and have had greater success with her now. So you see how this does, there's this linkage, you know, and I see with people I deal with too, they either have an affinity for a certain stallion, the progeny of a stallion, perhaps half siblings, in the case of MV Magnier buying this $3.4 million Galileo. Well, not only does Coolmore stand Galileo, but they also raised several of the siblings, including Sir Isaac Newton, who was a Group 3 winner, and the current Group 2 winner, Japan, who's a two-year-old. So there's always that affinity that does draw people, Steve, to what they're familiar with and have had success with.
Absolutely. Bring up Quality Road. Announcement coming yesterday. He will be more than doubled in price, it from $70,000 to $150,000.
Yeah, and that's just phenomenal. I mean, he's an exceptional looking stallion. He's also a big stallion, but for a big horse, he's extraordinarily quick. He set 3 track records, one at 6.5 furlongs, 2 at 9 furlongs. He was extremely fast, agile. He's by elusive quality, and he's siring horses that are good two-year-olds like Bellafina, very good three-year-olds, good four-year-olds, turf horses like Spring Quality, sprinters like City of Light. He's really hitting every segment of the game, Steve. His stud fee, though, was listed at 70, which had gone up to 70 last year. It was very difficult to get him at 70. And now this year, he's actually the leading sire of Grade 1 winners this year with 5. And, the people at identified the horse early, as you mentioned, Joe Minor for one, but others too, they kind of created this because they were able to ride the wave. Now a lot of people are going to get knocked out of him because they can't afford him, but that's the way the game goes.
Well, aside from that news, we've also been keeping tabs on the long series of announcements of signings and Spendthrift.
Yeah,
has gotten into the act this week too. We should touch on that with the news that West Coast and Bolt Oro both ultimately will stand at Spendthrift. And
West Coast is going to Lane's End.
Lane's End, excuse me. And I meant to say that as part of the West Coast piece, Accelerate and City of Light, it feels like Lane's End is really, has really gotten active here and to position themselves, for next year. It really, Sid, you get the sense that breeders, will have, there'll be a competitive marketplace. I mean, is it would you call it a seller's market or a buyer's market when it comes to the deal making and the decision making?
Well, again, the first year horses are so popular that you're not going to really get deals with these type of horses in this kind of climate, particularly the ones that are priced, really attractively. Look, just for, you have a few minutes on this?
Yeah, sure.
Let me just, so we keep listeners apprised of what's happened. Ashford's going to have 3, right? We already know about Justify. They're going to have Motown at 12.5 and Mendelssohn whenever he gets retired at the end of the year. Mendelsohn's going to be extremely popular. Justify, of course, there's no question. Motown is a grade one winning son of Uncle Mo. You know, he's priced right. Calumet's going to have a new horse, Ransom the Moon. He ran third this weekend. He's a grade one winner by Malibu Moon. Lane's End, you mentioned Accelerate, City of Light, and West Coast. Spendthrift, Voltoro, Free Drop Billy, and More Spirit was announced too, Steve, 10K. Mill Ridge has Oscar Performance, minimum 15K. Hillendale, Good Magic, and the new announcement, Army Mule at 10K. Now, Army Mule at 10K, I think, is going to be an extremely popular horse. You know, he was an 800-odd thousand two-year-old, known for his brilliance speed-wise, but had some issues, limited his starts. But, you know, he made a name for himself, and John Secura takes chances with horses like this, and he's had success. Don't forget, he started Candy Ride out. Candy Ride had brittle feet, six starts only, had an offbeat pedigree, and is now one of the top sires in the country. Airdrie has McCracken in Kentucky. Gainesway has McCracken is 10K. Gainesway has the Belmont Stationer Taprit at 12.5. Windstar has the Derby winner Always Dreaming at 25. And Adina Springs is bringing Shaman Ghost back from California for a second season. So that's right there, your horses so far in Kentucky. We still have to hear from horses like B Jersey, the Met Mile winner, Collected, Son of City Zip, perhaps Magnum Moon. Crowd computing, possibly, I don't know. But anyway, quite a few horses, and they're all going to be, you know, these first crop horses, Steve, are gonna get a lot of attention.
Well, this will be an interesting breeding season, Sid. You know, you when you see these kinds of performers go to stud, it really demonstrates why that third crop phenomena, and you know the way in which you know, the previous seasons, the previous couple of seasons crops, why it gets hard, and why you know,
right,
there's that drop off when there's this kind of, you know, influx of attractive candidates, and you know you really can put into perspective how difficult it is to you know catch some traction. You know, if you were in that arena that you know you weren't a big time grade one winner, and you know even if you've got a lot of properties in your pedigree and physically, you know it's easy to understand why you know some of those stallions kind of drop off the map, and why they end up being moved regionally or moved out of North America.
Yeah, that's so true. And we've tried to explain that phenomenon here. And, you know, what happens, Steve, is that, you know, we just described this list of first crop horses. Well, the people that are standing them, for example, the idea for them is we've got to give this horse the best mares we possibly can to try to make him with his first two-year-olds, right? That alone makes yearling buyers aware that Stallion's first crop is going to have some of his best mares. And that's why there's a big run on first crop horses, really, at the sales. A couple of things. You never know what you're going to get with that Stallion. And he's probably going to have his best mares. A case in point, the Frisette winner, grade one, right? Jaywalk, first crop of cross traffic. an unbridled song, who won the Whitney at four, only raced at four, stands at Spencer, entered stud at 12.5, and here he is now with the first crop grade one winner. And we've talked also about this unbridled song phenomenon. We're down to his last two sons, and they're in a battle royale right now to see who's going to be a successor or the successors. And right now with this particular crop, you've got Cross Traffic, who's already hit first with Jaywalk, who won a grade one. But you've got Will Take Charge, who's been firing some very good maiden winners too, and a few stakes winners. So again, one of the first crop runners, second crop folds from Will Take Charge, was to have to justify that the Gunthers bought back for a huge deal this year at the Keeneland September sale. So really, first crop, second crop are your primary chances the horse gets. By the time they get to third and fourth crops, third crop, there's a bit of a lift, Steve, that happens organically, and that's because when breeders are going to breed in that third crop, they get to see the weanlings from the first crop. And if those weanlings look really good, and there's quality across the board, you'll see in that third crop another kind of lift where you get some good mares again. So what you have is the first crop, it drops down a little to your second crop, perhaps a little rise in the third crop, big drop in that fourth crop because their two-year-olds are running. And, you know, depends on what happens from there on.
Now, finally, as an exit, I got to mention one name that I put off to the side, and I've been saving. It's actually, I kept the screen open for a couple of days. Ever since that upset at Santa Anita with Laker Ball, and this is a cool story. Laker Ball, Lakerville, who is the latest Barry Abrams. Barry, what he achieved with Unusual Heat, and here it looks like Lakerville. I mean, it's just the littlest hint, Sid. But it's possible with just a small group of covers, Lakerville, you know, could end up kind of taking on, you know, his side, Unusual Heat's place. Yeah, I mean, it. I know it's just one horse, and it happens that Laker Ball was also Lakerville's first winner, so it's not unusual that he becomes the first stake winner. But I was intrigued by this because, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Barry's, and this feels like a name to keep watching. Because I mean, the horse himself, Lakerville, he was fast, and clearly he's going to pass on some positive attributes to offspring.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Unusual Heat, by the way, by Nureyev out of the Danish mare Rosard. I happened to see that Rosard was like the third dam of a stakes winner this weekend. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head now, but just made me think of that. Her name was certainly in the pedigree of a big winner this weekend.
I wish Barry, you know, Barry's throat is bad, and We never, you know, we talked plenty of times about, you know, during his training days. I wish the one conversation I didn't have with Barry that I'm disappointed he would have told everything. He's got a file that he showed me and years ago, and he kind of went through the history, and you mentioned, you know, Rosard and her amazing history and career. And I mean, this was a brilliant, really an amazing story that is I know it's gotten plenty of written attention over the years, but Unusual Heat's a remarkable tale.
And I found out who it was because Francis Caron just texted me. Next shares.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The second dam ... is by Nureyev out of Rosard. So ... the second dam of Next Shares is a full two Unusual Heat.
And the common, I think there's a commonality. In fact, I'm going to have a conversation with David May. David is, I think, integral. He was integral to the purchase of Next Shares and was involved in Laker Ball too. He's an Aucurant bloodstock agent right this minute. Seems like everything's coming up roses for David May.
Yeah, now that's I didn't know that, but that's interesting.
Well, Sid, as always, there's so much. We're going to look forward to starting to get organized the next couple of weeks. The conversations start to pare down and peruse the Breeders' Cup probables, and then the entrance. And we always count on you for some of those pedigree insights. But cross traffic with Jaywalk, and that was a big hit. We talked McLean's Music.
And by the way, McLean's Music's cloud computing, the Preakness winner, was from his first crop.
So this is timely. This is this is a nice follow up to get a juvenile Grade One winner to go with the classic winner. Absolutely, and it was a great weekend for Hill and Dale, who brings you Sire Watch Pedigree Focus each week, and a reminder too to get a hold of Sid and the work. Thoroughbred Consultants team, 510-490-1111. Last week we talked about registering your stallion for ENIC, and did we get some responses?
Yeah, we've most definitely when if you're retiring a stallion this year, put them up because you know, that's the only way people can really get the NICs free. And one of the reasons I'm mentioning it is we get sometimes irate calls at the office saying, well, how come this horse, we can't get nicks on it? Well, that's why. The stallion owner needs to register that horse in order to provide users with free nick access. So I would recommend they do that.
Get a hold of Work Thoroughbred Consultants, the team at Work, 510-490-1111. Follow Sid and follow Sire Watch and everybody, of course, at Hill and Dale, ready to help you this breeding season. And the sales season, of course, continues, and things starting to heat up. We see more and more broodmare prospects being added to the rosters for the November bloodstock sales, and as soon as Breeders' Cup dust settles, that becomes the priority. Sid, as always, I appreciate it.
Talk to you next week, Steve. Likewise.
You got it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Let's take a break. Timeout 15 to the top of the hour, and we'll visit with Gory Smith. Going to pay tribute to Denise Boudreau, and it was in 1974 on this date. The contest of the sexes. She beat Mike LaPonce at Lincoln Downs, and that was just one kind of sideshow element. Denise Boudreau was a top rider, and Frank will tell you more about her, and I think there's plenty of you that don't know as much as you'd like to about Denise and her spot in racing history as a important pioneer. That helped influence another generation of females in the irons. Frank Smith, Gory Smith, joins us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo and Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Back at the races, coming up on 11 o'clock, about 10 minutes away, and you've heard Hamilton Smith, Hammy Smith, on the show any number of times, and his brother Frank, known as Gory, Frank Smith, has crafted a career. He trained and sent out horses in the afternoons, too, but is just legendary. Down in Ellery at the training center, has gotten horses' careers started, and most notably Hall of Fame riders' careers started, like Chris Antley and the McCarrans, most recently Wes Hamilton. And an absolute pleasure to have Gory Smith join us. Frank, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. And it's really by chance that this all happened, because I saw earlier this week in one of those, you know, on this date in racing history, and I saw that on the 10th, October 10th, it was going to be an anniversary of the 1974 contest of the sexes between Denise Pedreau and Mike LaPonce at Lincoln Downs. And it's led me to you, because Denise Pedreau deserves a lot more attention than she gets in racing history as a real pioneer. In the 70s, she was the first female rider to win a riding title.
Right. Yeah, you're right. She needs to be recognized. That girl was a good rider. She was right there with the best of the girl riders, without a doubt. And good at it. I mean, she loved it and did a great job at it. She was learned down here in South Carolina, Junie Bresnahan outfit, Lucien Lawrence training track. And she learned to gallop and work horses down there for Bresnahan. and she and Jody Hammy's wife and to be Hammy's wife at the time, but another girl, the Smith girl, and anyway, those three girls were galloping horses for Bresnahan and those down there, and they went on to be riders. All three of the girls rode, but Denise. I had Judy on mine. Denise, I'm sorry. But Denise went on to be really a top rider in New England. And, you know, she won a lot of races up there. She could ride with anybody. She was as good a girl rider as you're going to find. And good at it.
You know, it's unusual, and I'm glad you brought up Junie Bresnahan because she was from Burlington, Mass, and
she
somehow got on the racetrack and worked in different jobs. She had a 4-H background. I guess her brother had gotten her a pony, and she learned on the 4-H circuit before, she got down to South Carolina and appeared to be a natural right away.
Yeah, she was in love with horses, and like I say, been doing it since she's a kid, and this just fell right into place for her, and she was athletic enough and strong enough. She just went right to the top. One of the better riders around New England back in the early 70s.
She, what's interesting, Gory, is she's been noted, Tammy Piermarini was quoted as Denise being an inspiration for her, and I just think it's odd that whenever female riders come up, you hear Crump and Rubin and Smith, and for whatever reason, I mean, she won over 1,000 races in about 15 years, and for whatever reason, she overcame injury too. She faced every adversity, and for whatever reason, her name does not get mentioned as much as it should.
I can't understand that either. She was a top rider at that time. In the girl ranks, she was in the top four or five girl jockeys in the country, without question. And, even the trainers around New England, if they needed a rider, if they could get her, they were glad to get her on a horse to ride for them. She was just that good. But, she was all heart and wasn't afraid to, to do what jockeys do, and she was right there. Like you say, she won over 1,000 races. One of the leading riders up there, she rode with some good jocks up there back in those days. And, she held her own. And like you say, these other girl jockeys that they always talk about, which is good, they were great jockeys. They did great, but they were none really better than this girl. She was right up there with them from the day one. Good, smart rider, too.
They called right away. They called her the long shot lady, and she was booting home. I found an article from 1974. Frank DeFord wrote an extensive piece about her in Sports Illustrated, and she was on her way to an amazing run. She won 94 races in 92 days during that Suffolk season in 1974.
Yep, I was up there. All right, she was red hot, and you just couldn't hardly beat her. But as I say, the good trainers didn't notice that. They picked up on her and used her when they could get her. And, guys like Carl Grismark and those, I remember he'd almost fight you to get Julie on a horse. But, Junie Bresnahan's outfit was a big outfit. But a lot of the good outfits, they all had her riding for them and really, really did a good job. She was a good gal.
She later on in her post riding days, she had a quarter horse, gelding, that she made into a kind of a rodeo act that she would take around, and it was called the Reluctant Racehorse, and he would lay down on her command. He would sit on a beanbag chair. There was a whole, she had a whole act that she cultivated with.
She'd been around all her life. She just, in love with horses and just couldn't get enough of it. She was out there every day, and she was down here learning with Bresnahan. I mean, those girls were going at it. Like, it was just a party every day, riding horses with no, you know, no job. It was just having fun.
Well, it have to bring this up, and you know, your knowledge of her and being around her also ties to the piece of property that she bought for her father down in Ellery, right near the training center.
That's right, right next to the training center. Here, she bought a 27-acre tract that bordered on the training center, and I think she had, you know, visions of settling in this area as she got older or retired, but her dad and mom moved down here. She got a place for them to live on the place there, and they came down and lived there until he died, until they died, and good people. And when I bought the training center here, they were still there. And I bought the piece of land from Julie and her dad after he died. But, yep, she was right here.
She, very sadly, brain cancer at just 57. And,
I know, I couldn't believe it, yeah.
It's been about 8 years.
I heard that. Yeah, it's just a shame because, you know, she had a great career and a good girl, too. And always straight up, honest, and just a good girl.
She married a guy by the name of Roley Hopkins, who was a publisher and published real estate journals in New York and Boston, and also writes mystery novels. He's still alive. And she rode a 70-to-1 shot, and that's how they met, and they eventually married.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Yeah, I knew he was a guy, you know, that took good care of her, and she had, you know, she was where she could, you know, afford to live well without having to ride horses, and after they got married, that was it. But she was just good, excellent rider, smart, and great personality. She got along with everybody. But she was a good one, one of the good girl riders, without a doubt. She ought to be in the top, you know, group of girls that they mentioned about back in those days, because she was one of the first, actually. You know, it just started, Barbara Jo and those, back in the late 60s, and she was right behind them.
Frank DeFord, Gory, called her the second generation, that she was the next wave.
That's right, and she was the best at it, right? Yep.
We wanted on this date, 1974, and what was fun about the contest of the sexes at Lincoln Downs, she, and I, you know, Mike Lepense was a good rider, too, but she beats him today, and then a week later, they swapped mounts, and she beat him again on the horse that he rode. Yeah, a week later.
That doesn't surprise me. She was that good. You're right, but it was a good time up there in New England during those years. And the girl jockeys coming out and, you know, becoming a part of the racing colony, jockey colony and all, that just brought on a lot of fanfare and all that, boy. It was a good time.
Well, that, and, you know, just mentioning, I put a picture up, too, on Facebook of her winning a race in the winter of 73 at Gansett, and this was at Lincoln Downs, and this just gives you an idea, you know, the two Rhode Island tracks, Narragansett Park and Lincoln Downs, Suffolk and Rockingham, and then the Fair Circuit.
And then the Fair Circuit, too, yeah. It was a great time up there during those years. Yeah, it was. And, you know, she's kind of a hometown girl up there. She came up from there. Maybe, you know, they knew her and all. She was really quite popular, I mean, in the public sector. But, you know, she was on top, like, you know, winning all those races. I mean, people came out to see her, for sure. But she was a good one.
Denise
and at the time,
Boudreau,
when she was winning all those races, I don't know that she wasn't rated really right at the top of the list of those girl riders, because they wouldn't outride her. That girl was good.
And she was a natural lightweight, too, right? She didn't have to work at the weight.
That's right. Right size, all. She never had no problems with that. And she, you know, she had, you know, she's always straight up. You know, no bad habits or nothing. She was right on the money. Hmm. Every day. Yeah.
And, you know, Gory, I'm not going to miss the opportunity with you. We've talked to Hammy so many times. I'm not going to miss the opportunity to talk to you too about, you know, what you did for and continue to do for young riders. And, you know, you presented Chris Antley to the family, his plaque in the Hall of Fame just a few years ago now. And of course, the McCarrans careers are tied to you. Most recently, Wes Hamilton's, Steve Hamilton's son. Steve sent Wesley now to you.
Yeah, Wes is down here. He's a good boy. He's doing well up in Maryland and got a great career ahead of him. Got a couple young kids planning to come in here in the next week or so that have called about coming to learn. So, you know, we've been doing that over the years. I guess I've probably got 8 or 10 kids around the country riding right now. And, you know, they're doing okay where they are. Malcolm Franklin, you know, is one boy out in Indiana. And he's a homegrown boy, but he rides out there. He's won over 1,000 races, 1,200 races. And been a leading rider out there several times. And, you know, a bunch of other boys. Brandon Whitaker, Wesley Holt, some of the boys around Maryland. And a bunch of them. I mean, there's too many to name. But, you know, we do that along with what we're doing with the horses. Because we generally have a lot of horses, and that's what young kids need to have to learn. And, you know, get on a lot of horses every day. So if we can do that for them, then that'll help us too. And Gordy, maybe make a good rider.
Yeah. Explain too, Gordy, because there's going to be people listening who probably have sons and daughters that have expressed interest. I mean, what is the avenue? I mean, how do these young people, young riders potentially, and listen, not every one of them is going to become an afternoon jockey. Some are going to be too big, and they're going to be exercise riders. But how do they find their way to you?
Well, through word of mouth, you know, around racetracks and things like that. Like, I had a trainer from Kentucky call me just last week. He said he had 3 young boys up there, teenagers, that wanted to know if they could come down and get started learning to ride. And one or two of them, I'm sure, are probably too big. One of them might be small enough. I told him if I get enough in here to fit them in, I'll sure as hell give them a shot. You know? But it's fun doing that. I tell you, I get about as much satisfaction out of that as I do getting a good horse, you know, for a client.
Sure.
If I can get these kids, you know, to give them something to focus on and stay in behind them and let them, you know, just try to give them a challenge every day and see if they, you know, just see if they got the will to get there and learn how to do it. And, you know, it's a lot of fun and a lot of pleasure. And it's great when you can get these young kids that, you know, come from families that have problems and this and that, but come in here and, you know, I get some of them texting on the phone all the time about what they're doing, where they're at, and want to let me know where they are and all that. It's just like a bunch of family, you know. It's fun. And we get a lot of fun out of that. And all the other boys, the regulars around here, they talk about, you know, who's doing what. They follow the boys riding and all. I get here in the mornings, and these guys already know that so-and-so won 2 yesterday, or that one's, you know, 1-1, that kind of thing. And, you know, it becomes something that everybody follows, and it's great. And they know we care about them.
Well, the respect that and appreciation that you command throughout the sport is well known. And you know, you talk about family. You know, we've had Hammy many times, and you know, you and I know he talks about you reverentially, and you had another, you had the oldest, but your oldest brother, right, was a rider.
Yeah, he was a rider back in the late 40s, early 50s. That's sort of when we got into business, and used to be horse racing here, right at Ellery here, at the track, back in the 40s, where it all started, and then they outlawed gambling, but my brother, older brother, he was galloping horses and working around the farms right close here, and learned to ride, wanted to ride here at LRE, and anyway, they closed up the track, but he was ready to ride, so he went north, and he rode up there for several years and was doing fine, you know, at the smaller tracks. And funny thing, when he was a bug boy, he rode at the tracks up there, and John Tamaro III, who's dead now, was a rider at the same time. And if anybody knows and remembers John Tamaro, he grew to be a great big heavy guy. You couldn't imagine he'd ever been a jockey. He was a jockey in the late 40s, early 50s. But anyway, you know, my brother was going to get drafted because of the Korean War, so he joined the Air Force. And my dad kept a few horses in play with some neighbors until he got out, and then he started taking the few horses my dad had up to New England. We started racing there about 1955, 56. And we've been at it ever since. And it's been great. You run and meet some great people. Really meet some great people. Just like these little kids that, that want to be riders and things like that. It just makes you want to get up in the morning and get this thing done. And get good horses and good riders. Can't beat that combination.
Well, when it comes to making good riders, I mean, some come with natural ability, and we can't help but talk about Antley in this vein, and the McCarrans as well. I mean, how quickly can you decide when you watch a kid get aboard, and of course they come to you with different degrees of experience, some with none, but how quickly do you conclude whether somebody is going to A, make it, or B, be a star?
Well, it doesn't take long. It's things you're looking for early on is this, are they interested, and are they looking at it as something that's, fascinates them a little bit, that they want to learn what and listen to what you're saying so that they can understand what's going on around them. And that's the fun part, too, of teaching them is showing them things that they don't know about or wouldn't see, going on with a horse, or how a groom's handling a horse, or how a good exercise boy is doing this or that with this horse that's unruly, explaining to them all that. And then we go in the office sometimes, the kids, and we'll sit there and watch the races on TV, and we'll talk about what this rider did or that rider did in the race. And, they get a lot of fun out of that. And, it doesn't take you long, though. Heck, in the first couple of weeks, 10 days, if a kid's here and getting him started, you can pick up whether he's here to learn and we can get him focused on something. And most of them stay, though. And we're proud of that.
Is it fair to suggest that Antley was the best natural talent that you've seen?
Oh, yeah, he was a raw talent. I mean, it didn't take 10 days with him. The first 5 minutes on a horse, I knew he was something different. But I think he was at home on the first horse he ever sat on, and that's all he ever wanted to do after that. And he was just as he was, one of a kind. And there had been some others, just like you talk about the McCarran boys. They were up with Odie Clellan right up the road here at that farm, and they're the same way. Greg McCarran, he rode for me up in New England when he was a rider, and Chris did too. And they're like family. They still are. They're running them somewhere at a sale or some racetrack or something. Chris, it's kind of like we're family, and we have a talk. But that's what you want to build into a young kid like that. A lot of them don't have, maybe good family connections or a lot of money or anything like that behind them. And it just makes them feel like they got somebody's behind them. We stay behind them, too. I got a girl in the office. She's up on every one of them every day. And if somebody does something good, whether he's one that doesn't win many races, she's going to probably email him or send him a little, congratulations. But that's what we want to do. Makes it worthwhile of them and us. And, love doing it.
Well, Gorey Smith is with us, Ham Smith's brother, and we're talking from Ellery, South Carolina. And, everybody's familiar and has heard about the Aiken trials that, but Ellery's got, you got trials at Ellery, right?
We do, yeah. We've been doing it 55 years. And every March, just like the, Aiken trials in Aiken, we have the Ellery trials here. It was a throwback to the 30s and 40s when they used to be racing in South Carolina. But in March, we have a day here with the races, and we'll run maybe 11 races, usually around the 20th of March, before everything goes north. And we usually run about 11 races. Five or six will be thoroughbreds. The other five or six will be quarter horses. And, we get a great crowd of people. We may maybe get, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people out here. And it's just a big tailgating party and have a lot of fun. These young kids, to get to ride in front of the crowd and all that is when they're getting along with their training as riders and schooling them. you know, we give them a little practice run down here if we can. And, you know, it works out real good. And it was, the racing back in the 40s, there were a lot of people that liked it. And, you know, we started having the trials in the 60s, and it's been a, you know, a big deal down here in the spring every year.
Typically about the third weekend of March, right? Third weekend?
Yeah, usually around the 20th. It could be the third, could be the fourth, depending on how the calendar falls. But every year, good old friend, John Giovanni, great rider in New England back in the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
He comes up from Florida every year. Yeah. And, you know, others do too. John, he learned to gallop horses here when he was a kid back in the 50s. And that's when I first even met him. But, you know, he was head of the Jockeys Guild one time. Anyhow, sure. He's a good friend.
You've got everybody that knows Gorey Smith is a friend, and you mentioned the family just a couple of weeks ago. The next generation of Smiths, your nephew with his first win as a trainer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Jason, we finally got him there to go and get his trainer's license and saddle one up and get going. Now he's won a race. He wants me to send him more horses, so I'll have to do something. I'm going to get in trouble with his dad, but I'm going to have to help him out, I reckon.
Well, your brother and sister-in-law, they've sent the. I know there's a few horses that he's training for Hammy.
Yeah, it's great. Just proud of him. Glad he's, you know, see him win a race, and we got to kind of get him on his way here. But yeah, he's tickled to death with that. Really, really glad he got, you know, got a start and he's won a race now. So we'll see where he goes. We'll help him.
Well, and of course, Hamilton, Hammy, you know, continues to win, and is as good as anybody on the Eastern Seaboard or anywhere else.
Damn good horseman, wins races, and does a great job. Been there a long time, still one of the better trainers in the Maryland circuit, right at the top of the list. And they love it up there, and we just try to keep. Like I say, keep it going.
Well, and it'll be probably about this time next year. I would say the fall of next year, Hammy will hit 2,000 wins. He's at 1944 right now.
Yeah, he's somewhere up in there. I know in the 1900s, and it's just a matter of, like I say, hopefully just a couple more years or so. He can get to 2,000. That'd be a great thing. I don't know if a trainer, South Carolina native, has ever done that as a horse trainer, but I think he'll probably be the first. But, yeah, we're excited about that. We're trying to help him get there. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is, and one of our favorite conversations. Think back to a couple of years ago, done talking was a top 3-year-old for him, and Blind Date was a
That's
tremendous filly.
Yep, yeah,
humoristic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's done. He just does a good job with his horses, and good with 2-year-olds, and hardly ever runs a short horse. I'll tell you that. They're dead fit when he runs them.
There you go. There's a hallmark. Doesn't run a short horse. That's something good to put on an epitaph, right? Never ran a short horse.
Exactly. Right. That'll fit him. Yeah. But
Gorey, I'm so delighted to have you on, and I was there when you honored Chris Antley. Was in the pavilion that day, and it was very moving. And I'm delighted that we could pay tribute to Denise Boudreau today.
Yeah, I'm glad you did that, because she deserved every bit of it, and the racing world ought to remember her. It really should. Great rider.
Well, Frank Gorey Smith, everybody, and if you're going to be passing through or you're in the South Carolina area, you know about the Aiken Trials. Now you know about the Ellery Trials. Show up that third or fourth week there in March and take it in.
We, Right. We're just 5 miles off I-95. Just drop right in. Yeah. We're glad to see you. Yep.
And we're glad that we could talk to Gorey Smith. Frank, thanks so much.
All right. Anytime. Thank you.
Absolutely delighted to get Gorey Smith in here after so many conversations with Ham. And I do see it got a reaction already online. In fact, Maggie Kimmett, who was with us last week ahead of the retired racehorse project, and I haven't even reported on the result. He ended up with the show horse that was America's most wanted thoroughbred, and I should really, I was remiss in not, after all the nice build-up we had heading toward the makeover, I got to get you those results now that I'm thinking about it. And apparently a big turnout at the horse park, so give that, got to get... I'll do that when we come back, too. Let's take the break. We're about halfway into hour three, or 15 into hour three. Seth Merrow is going to come to you from Maine. We missed Seth last week, and this will be very emotional because Seth is back in Portland, back in Maine for the closing of the house. Yeah, the one that, he sold this right out from under us. Tina and I have no place to go anymore in Maine. It's very troubling. Seth Merrow, when we come back, the last conversation from the compound, the Falmouth compound after this.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.